Good evening, dear and blessed ones, and welcome this evening. With our Christ candle lit, we begin our time in prayer in the name of the Father and of the Son and in the name of the Holy Spirit, the God transcendent, omnipresent, and immanent, the Holy Living Trinity. Amen. And so as we gather this evening to practice, we practice in vulnerability, opening to the small signs of grace from our work with one another, transparent, open, willing, listening, knowing that our work matters for ourselves, for one another, for all creation. And therefore, we place ourselves intentionally under the canopy of the work, attuned to the conscious circle of humanity. As we receive being food, may we also provide food to serve, to relieve suffering, to lift up, and to love. As I was pondering this time and looking for whom to reflect upon this evening, I was carried back to a story of valuation and great personal sacrifice that directly accrues to us. And it is just a snippet from the lives of Catherine and Maurice Nickel. So here we are in June 2021. And this story goes back to June 1940, 9 months after England had declared war on Germany. Throughout the 1930s was a time of great rising tension throughout Europe as the prelude to war was being accelerated. And at the same time, however, the work group that Maurice Nickel was shepherding was progressing steadily, even among the worsening international conditions. Fearing that London would be bombed, many of his friends came out to the country where they lived to stay at the farm. So they were packed into this location. Crowds of people came down, and there were actually nightly watches because there was the expectation that perhaps there would be bombs in their area also. So accommodations were stretched. Food preparation was quite an event on a daily basis. But nevertheless, the Nickels celebrated the marriage of their daughter in June 1940. And the very next day after the marriage, they received a notice from the military that they had 24 hours to evacuate their property because the military was going to take it over. Needless to say, you know, the story goes that there was a feeling of dismay and anxiety, perhaps, that they, amidst a flurry of great activity, had to simply move out of where they lived and leave all of their, not only their possessions, but their routines, their lives, and relocate with all of these people. Amazingly, Maurice Nickel was able to find another property to rent. So 24 hours later, they picked up and moved. And Dr. Nickel made it known at that time was a reminder that the work in all individual groups could be compared with the biblical ark. It was a symbol of a way of preserving a central knowledge. in dark periods. It was a reminder that the work had to be completely transportable and had no permanent stable home, that each of us could never be grounded in satisfaction, if you will, that we had somehow attained and now permanently were anywhere. But on a moment's notice, we had to go, as Thomas Keating would say, go anywhere or go nowhere. So if we struggle to do our own work during a time of tumultuous times, we can remember that our heritage comes from great personal sacrifice from the Nichols, who carried on their work continuously throughout the war, after the war, until the very moments of their death. So we honor Catherine and Maurice Nichol this evening, and may you be abiding in the highest levels of the conscious circle of humanity. And may we, by our work and our respect, honor and celebrate your lives. Amen. So now we do prepare ourselves consciously to enter into a place of stillness of inner being and outer being, a place of imminent trust and receptivity to these influences that so long ago were being created and handed over until they found their way to us. And there's a great power in that, a power emanating from the spirit to us. And so we sit with back upright, a strong back, heart open, mind in directed attention. And we breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything, everything that may be constrained in fears, everything that seems dark or harsh or shameful, maimed, ugly, irreparably damaged, diseased, unforgiving, and unforgivable, wounded or resistant, apathetic, anxious, regretful, everything. We become aware of the sensation of all of it, the feelings of it, and we hold it all as an offering. We lift it and transubstantiate it in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, in light. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything, and extend out this light into all worlds. Handing over the complexities of the day, the plans for tomorrow, the anxieties of our hearts. Anything that is constructed and imaginary in order to yield to the real, to the divine human life that is ours. We stand unencumbered before God and one another. Amen. and we enter into Lectio Divina. I worried a lot. Will the garden grow? Will the rivers flow in the right direction? Will the earth turn as it was taught? Was I right? Was I wrong? Will I be forgiven? Finally, I saw that worrying had come to nothing and gave it up. Now I am convinced that nothing could ever separate us from God's love. Neither death nor life. Neither angels nor demons. Neither our fears for today nor our worries about tomorrow. Not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. I worried a lot. Will the garden grow? Will the rivers flow in the right direction? Will the earth turn as it was taught? Was I right? Was I wrong? Will I be forgiven? Finally, I saw that worrying had come to nothing and gave it up. Now I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love. Neither death nor life. Neither angels nor demons. Neither our fears for today nor our worries about tomorrow. Not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. I worried a lot. Will the garden grow? Will the rivers flow in the right direction? Will the earth turn as it was taught? Was I right? Was I wrong? Will I be forgiven? Finally, I saw that worrying had come to nothing and gave it up. Now I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love. Neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither our fears for today nor our worries about tomorrow. Not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. And so it is. You are now invited, as you are moved to do so, to share with us what you received from the reading of this passage, or perhaps gazing upon that wondrous image, or the thoughts of your hearts at this time. Perhaps someone who hasn't shared in a very long time, you've received something that would benefit all of us. Or maybe it is a simple little thing, a sign, a micro sign of grace. Yes, Bob.
Well, since I haven't shared in quite some time, and I may not be sharing a lot because we're going to be leaving for the summer, and I may not be here in a lot of the future journey groups on Thursday, although I will keep up on that. I just want to, what a bold statement to make. The powers of hell cannot separate us from God's love. To me, that was it's very absolute. And I thought, well, how can that be? And then the other part of me says, well, that's because that's the way it is. Our nature is God's love, and we cannot be separate from that. We may ignore it, or we may not practice it or cultivate it in the fullest extent of our human ability, but whether we like it or not, it's choiceless. And that's who we are. So in that sense, you know, you could be in the fires of hell and still be completely consumed by God's love. I can't imagine that, but I certainly hope I'm not heading that way. But but it did strike me powerfully, and I thought I would add that for whatever it's worth. Yes.
It is powerful. Thank you, Bob. Amen. Dennis, please.
Hi. I haven't shared in a long time because I haven't participated live, but I'm glad to be here tonight. I have not typically had a lot of reaction to some of the paintings that have shown up, except for today I was looking at this one. And I find it particularly moving, both from my feeling is that the hand that's coming down from the heavens or the cosmos is just very, to me, very inspiring and makes me very hopeful that someone, something, God would care enough to reach down and help me and pull me up. But then also looking at the hand coming up from the darker areas of the painting, also gives me hope, because if I am in that lower areas, darker areas, that it shows that I am willing and have the courage, if I could, and you know, seeing that as myself, to raise my hand up to accept that, to accept the help. And so I just find it very moving in a way that I have not been moved by some of the others.
Thank you, Dennis. Yes. As I was gazing upon it myself, even by reading the passage, I thought I could just sit here for a very long time and just gaze, and that could be it. I would be complete. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for your sharing. Jim.
Should be able to hear me, yes?
Yes.
Okay. I found this reading to be very, very inspired, I guess. It's so, because it starts us off saying, will the garden grow? And so there's a part of me that goes, well, that's a stupid question. You can't control that. Why are you worrying about the garden? Okay, well, now we get even more ridiculous. Will the rivers flow in the right direction? Oh, that's something I really need to worry about. All right. Yeah, I can control that. Well, the earth turned. Oh, it's even bigger, even more ridiculous. So we're being dragged in this this direction of, why do you bother to worry about these things? And then suddenly it's, was I right or was I wrong? Boom, the complete other direction. This is something I could be worrying about. I could be married to someone who worries about that. There are all kinds of ways I can suddenly apply that. Will I be forgiven? Well, I don't know, but I certainly don't control that. And so then Mary Oliver says, I gave it up. And I thought that was such a sneaky way of getting us to take her question seriously by making us laugh at her at first and then realize, I'm just as ridiculous as the person who thinks they're going to make the earth turn the other way, because that would really make more sense than the one that's happening. So, bravo to Mary Oliver and to the person who picked this one out, because it certainly brought my attention to the material for tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Absolutely. Thank you for highlighting that, Jim. Thank you. Mark, please.
Hi, everyone.
Good evening, Mark.
Good evening. So I took the sort of whole passage spoke to me as well, but like Bob said, the last phrase was really powerful in that not even the powers of hell can separate me from God. And what I took from that was that, you know, in the context of this body mind flow, it moving through time and all of its agitations, all of its concern, deep and profound worries about the world, about my family, about where all of this is going, the resentments that I carry against the people I love the most, even. Mm-hmm. All of that even in the middle of that, self-remembering is available to me. This second body that is growing inside me through applying these principles, engaging with the work, engaging these practices, sitting in silence, that help is available and it's always there and I can access it when I wish to. So that's what I took from it.
Yes, thank you. That's all and everything, Mark. Thank you. And Jackie and Lee, please.
I recently got, 2 months ago, I got a medical report that created a lot of worry in me. And I am convinced that nothing can ever separate me from God's love. What prayers I ask for are that worrying has come to nothing. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you. Take care. And thank you, everyone, for the thoughts of your hearts that were evoked by this passage and by the image. May it feed us all, spoken or unspoken. Thank you. And so tonight, we continue our journey through the passions. Exploring them in wonder, sometimes surprise, humility, vulnerability. And I'm very pleased to introduce Karen Betts, who is going to accompany us on this journey this evening. Karen, welcome.
Thank you, Marianne. So yes, tonight we're going to dive into anxiety and regret. But first, I want to emphasize, and it's been brought up, but I want to emphasize that none of these passions we've been talking about over these past weeks are bad. And we're not bad work students for experiencing them, because everybody does. Everybody has them. So Peter introduced them to us as deadly, and they were called that, excuse me, because they're the behaviors that take us away from God. In the early church, it was called eternal damnation. Here we call it the lie of separation. These passions are, after all, just a distortion of our virtues. And by recognizing the passions and working on them, we restore the virtue. So there's a children's story called Going on a Bear Hunt. And we're told in there, you can't go over it, you can't go under it, you can't go around it. You can only go through it. So going through the passion is how we restore the virtue. And yes, there are many thoughts and feelings that can take us away from our relationship with God. And tonight we're going to focus on our good friends, anxiety and regret. But now before we do that, let's see what we discovered or learned or observed. I wonder, let me bring up our screen here. I wonder what gifts we found in our fear. So here's our homework from last week. And certainly, you know, thank you, Dr. Hawkins, for his wonderful scale of consciousness and how much we've been diving into it, and we will again. But can you see how these thoughts and beliefs were given to, we gained them in our innocence, and now we can surrender them? And then also to practice Visio Divina, several of you mentioned the image tonight, and certainly this image from last week. You know, some of these images are just absolutely incredible. I invite you to go back and look at them. You know, how does this image speak to you about the transformation of your fear? So if you'll raise your hands and let me know, what gift did you get? Greta.
Good evening, Karen.
Hello, love.
Well, I have a practice that I dance in the woods with a number of other people every week for about 2.5 hours. And during that time, I practice the I am breath that Gurdjieff teaches. I practice being joyous in the sense that I can move my body, that I can be aware, and I let my thoughts fall away, so that awareness of not only myself, but my surroundings, the people around me, the woods, etc., can permeate me. And I did this, and after the dance, I was basically in three-centered being. I was aware of my breath. I was aware of my emotions, which were love. And I was aware in thoughts without projection or reaction. And I happened to have the good fortune to talk to somebody who had danced in the same dance with me for about 20 years, whom I had never talked to before. And as I was talking to this person, my heart was very open, and there did not seem to be any barriers between us. Mm. And I realized at that point that a buffer had dropped, that I tend to be afraid of people I don't know, and I perhaps project a wall of resistance around me, and that wall of resistance was no longer there. Mm-hmm. And that wall of resistance came through fear and anxiety and social tension about talking to people that I was not familiar with. And that once it was gone, and I realized how prevalent it had always been in my life, there was at first a sense of how could I do this to myself and other people, but that was kind of overtaken by a sense of remorse and a profound sense of the blessing that I had just been given. I am so, so utterly grateful and have been practicing being open and really three-centered in a unified way with people since then. And I am happy to report that it has had really excellent consequences, both in my own feelings and in the feelings of others. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you. I think you give us a great example of something we acquire in our innocence. I think as children, we all heard our parents say, in some form, don't talk to strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And what an incredible buffer that laid down in us that, you know, we acquired at whatever age we were finally old enough to think we could talk to strangers. And that it, you know, may have served our parents to have us not do it, but it did not serve us. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who else found a gift in exploring your fear? Tamara, please.
So I really love this email because right at the beginning, it just spoke to me. And when it talks about how fears are when you're like the exact sentences, in fact, fear only arises at the moment the thinking fixes on the past or the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that really spoke to me a lot because, you know, I know that my imagination stirs things up about the future as far as fear goes. And one thing that's always really worked for me, and now I know why, is if I wake up in the morning and I had, when I was thankful, and I went through mm-hmm. what I'm thankful for. And now I realize it's because I was bringing myself into the moment, you know, mm-hmm. instead of letting my imagination, first thing in the morning, my imagination would go to all these things I'm fearful of. And it's amazing how, you know, your imagination can just take control like that. First thing in the morning, you're bright and ready to go with the day. And these things come up for me. And so I realize now that that's what I was doing when I was waking up and just, you know, telling myself that I think that I'm thankful for. That was bringing me in the moment instead of letting my imagination take me into the future or the past, you know. So I'm real thankful for that as a reminder. And now I'm going to spend more time in the now, you know, centering prayer helps do that as well. But yeah, so I love that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. There's a commentary, and I'm sorry, I can't quote you which one, but Dr. Nichol talks about how we have a few very brief moments first thing in the morning to set our state. And you gave a great example about how quick that passes from an open slate. I can choose my state this morning to, you know, a habitual form of fear. Oh my God, everything's going to go wrong. And what a great practice to start your day and to choose your state. Now, thank you. Thank you. Rebecca, please.
Hello, Karen.
Hello.
I am really the subject of fear, it's just so big. And I have enjoyed hearing what has been shared, and I look forward to hearing more. For me, there were two parts of the homework or my experience of the email that I wanted to share. One is that I have a long-standing discomfort with what my personal responsibility is in terms of homeless people. I sometimes give money, I sometimes don't. I know what I realized is that probably a lot of that discomfort comes from a fear of, you know, I could be a homeless person, you know, I could mm-hmm. be out there on the streets with nothing and this and that. And it's just been an area of deep discomfort. And this last week at some point, I had a chat with a fellow who was, you know, asking for money at a particular intersection. And we just had this lovely conversation while the light was red about how he felt like he was in the right place at the right time. This was his, you know, this was his, he believed in destiny. He believed in fate. This is what he was doing. And this is what he was doing. We didn't carry that further, but it was just a reminder to me that we are all just, we're in the place where we are. And that's where we are. And it allowed me to just remember an attitude I had to take up when I went to India, because I was so scared of going to India in terms of all the people and all the poverty mm-hmm. and what to do about it and not knowing how to be with it. And just realizing that I am just sharing this time on this planet mm-hmm. with a whole bunch of other people, and we are all having our own experience of that. Mm-hmm. And it allowed me to, it's not that I, you know, that sort of loving detachment, that detachment mm-hmm. with love is something that I had to learn, and that I have to be reminded about. And just, you know, I don't need to be afraid of other people or of their experience. We're just mm-hmm. sharing moments together, either intimately or sort of different realities, but, you know, that's, we're just doing it. Mm-hmm. And that was a really useful reminder, and I just feel sort of relaxed now in that, you know, being in the moment with whoever I'm in the moment with. And then the other part of the journey email, which I just loved, was that reminder, or the change of perspective that allows us to view our inner darkness, which we might see as nothingness and a place, you know, a place that we're afraid to go, as a sacred place mm-hmm. where God is waiting for us. Mm-hmm. And that was a wonderful change of perspective for me. That's it.
Well, thank you. One of your statements about not being afraid of someone else's reality, I think that's so powerful, in that the gift you give them is your presence. You know, their reality, it's theirs. We project all sorts of things on it. Oh dear, they're homeless. Oh dear, they're poor. Oh dear, they're, you know, fill in the blank. But if we can just see them as fellow human beings, like you said, on this planet, all 7 billion of us, you know, each having a unique experience, the best I can give you, you know, whether I give you a dollar or not, the best gift I can give you is my presence. And what a gift, right? You gave.
That honest mm-hmm. being in the moment with them at that time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. beautiful. Thank you. Mary Leah, please.
Hey, Karen.
Hey.
So when I first came across the email and in class last week, I was pretty sure that this one didn't particularly pertain to me. You know, there's some weeks that are really hitting home and some weeks are sort of, that's pretty good. So I made a list. I did my homework. I made my list of my fears and I kept adding to it. And what I came to realize is that all of the fears on that list have to do with the same emotional program for happiness. Mm. So I don't have fears around security and survival, money fears, housing, none of that, nothing that comes, you know, troubles me. And the fears that I have are all around the center for approval, esteem, affection, regard, love. And I found that very interesting that where I fear is all in that same place. So it's very, I found that very interesting. Then I went back and I read the list, the Hawking's list, the dualities of fear, and I read both sides. And I was gobsmacked by something just completely hit me like a ton of bricks. And this is what it is. When I read the list on the left, I can see how I engage in many of these behaviors and many of these, attractions. And that I see now that those are indicators of fear in me that I go to instead of acknowledging and feeling the fear. Mm-hmm. So for example, let me give you one example, and there's lots of them, but this one is to elaborate and escalate. I do that all the time. Some little thing will happen and, you know, it happened twice, but nope, Mary Leah says it happened 14 times. And it was huge and it was big and I escalated. And another one here that is perfect to describe this one is dramatize. So what the learning for me was, that the realization was that when those behaviors come up, I am not wanting to feel the fear that really is there. And so the beautiful thing for me this week, the lesson, the beautiful gift is that this list now can be my reminder that when I am experiencing one of these things, this excitement of danger, I can say, okay, that's an interesting indicator for you that this emotion that's coming up or this thought that's coming up about excitement of danger is actually a way that you're engaging so that you don't have to feel the fear. And it's just such a powerful thing. I've seen this list before, and this time it was exactly ordained for me. So I am delighted. I'm working with delight, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. My probably biggest fear also is in the affection and esteem program for happiness. You know, and this week what I saw was not that I was afraid. I mean, there was a time, yes, I was afraid I was not going to be loved or liked or approved of. And now it's more subtle. The message is, well, you know, if your grandchildren really loved you, they'd call. And just to see how incredibly crafty, if you will, subtle these messages can be. It's not necessarily that we're chewing on our fingernails scared. It's that we're being told these lies by our false personality. And sometimes they're incredibly subtle and very soft, and good on you for beginning to get that inner taste that this means, oh, I have fear. Mm-hmm. Well done. Well done.
I'm glad you approve of me.
I do. Oh. Oh. We have time for a couple more. Who else would like to share? Sorry, the mold count is still high in case anyone cares. Pam, please.
Oh, there, I can see you. My, Well, that was really helpful, Mary Elaine. So now I'm making notes all over my page here. But what I was looking at how I divert my attention away from a fear by things like looking at not wanting to feel the pain. I'd rather take an aspirin, or I'd rather get busy, or I'd rather, so different things like that. I was looking at that, I'll do another load of laundry rather than sit with the pain in my knee, or whatever the thing was. So I was on to that, but now I can go down that list and I can go, oh, self-control. Well, okay, control myself rather than feel the fear. Dramatize. Okay, let's be dramatic rather than feel the fear. Wow, that's just huge, because that's what it's all about. It's the way I divert my attention from the sensation in particular, which I've been trying to work with the sensation in the body. And when there is fear involved, which there is a fear of feeling the pain, whether it's emotional or physical, there are fears around that. And I love the Salzman statement too about the past and the future and the now. So my work has been in trying to return to the body, to be patient and feel the sensation of it. Anyway, I won't go into any more, but that's it. And I'm really grateful for that little tip there. So, gosh, I get so much out of these classes and our sharing. I love you guys.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, we feed each other. It is a banquet. But yeah, you would want to know, how is it that you're avoiding feeling? And so, yeah, great. Well, I saw Tracy a minute ago, but Francis.
Okay. Am I heard right now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. I shared this in a journey group to examples of fear that I have observed. And one of them I talked about how I'm doing a project right now or an internship, and I'm proofreading maps of state parks. And I'm seeing all of these state parks that I've never visited before. And a lot of them that I was looking at are in East Texas, and some of them are close to the Louisiana-Arkansas border. And I thought, wow, what cool places to go. And because I was, you know, I'm an outdoors kind of person. and then immediately the next thought was, am I safe in a tent on the ground at night in East Texas? Am I safe hiking down a trail? You know, is someone who looks like me going to be okay? Mm-hmm. So there was some fear there. And I don't know that I have a resolution for that except to feel it. And to, you know, I work with some of the affirmations and the denials. I know that I cannot change the world around me in a literal way. I can transform how this one responds to what it sees in the observations. And another aspect of fear that I shared, which is about children. Like, I've had this fear. I'm afraid to have children for reasons I couldn't really put my finger on. The flip side of that is I have FOMO, or fear of missing out, about, oh my gosh, what if I miss out on having children? And, but there's an I that gets stuck between those two polarities. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a freeing place to be. It's a very, it's feeling pulled between these two extremes, and there's a lot of tension there. And what I saw for myself is that it's not about the external children I would have or not have. It's about, there's some energy there about the inner child here, maybe something in the time body for me about feeling welcome and feeling wanted and feeling safe in the world. And although I know that my parents wanted to bring me into the world and wanted to have me, there's something in that time body, in that child, that doesn't feel like it might be wanted or be safe. And there's some childhood experiences I can relate that to. But in feeling into that, what I've been working with is one of the affirmations from Lessons in Truth, and holding that child, the Frances back in the time body, and affirming for her that I am a child or manifestation of God, and every moment God's life, love, wisdom, power flow into and through me. I am one with God and am governed by God's law. And to continue to affirm that ultimately that's where I come from. That is self-remembering for me.
Yeah.
That helps me to pull myself above the polarities of our planet and our society. And so I wish to continue to hold that inner child with that practice. So that's my share. Thank you.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, to work our time bodies, even if we're not sure where that fear began, is powerful work to help heal that child. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Tracy.
Karen?
Hey.
Oh. Thought I could sneak off there. You caught me.
Yeah.
This fear personality type. I'm afraid I check all the boxes for sure on fear. But it's interesting. I can see the blessing of the work and all of our practices in many aspects of my life. I have a child that's truly living a bohemian life. And, I've worked in that space for many years. And, most of the time, it's okay. It's okay. She's experiencing what she needs to experience. And she's in God's hands. And my job is just to love her through that. And I think, one of the things that I observed this week, primarily around fear in my own life, is fear around physical pain or discomfort. And I have an injury that's been reactivated, and it's behaving in a very mysterious way, and, coming and going and manifesting in different ways, and 3 steps forward, 2 steps back kind of dance. And I see how fixated I can get on my routine and, kind of doing all the right things to protect myself somehow, or thinking that I'm protecting myself somehow, or doing what my therapist says to do. It's this desire to control, going back to that list, the imagination that I am in control of this situation. So the homework that really helped me was this idea of I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And just continuing to reaffirm, I don't know where this is going. I don't know. It's in God's hands. It could improve. It might not. It's my work to be with this now.
Mm-hmm.
There's something more for me here, just to be with it. And I found the body was really helpful, because when I could just, lift it up, and then, in the same motion, kind of shift back into the body, into my belly in particular, and just breathe. And relax that, I felt a lot of freedom in that. And oftentimes, one other thing I'll add here too is, a lot of this stuff is just habits, sometimes I can look and there doesn't seem to be any real fear. It's just, I've just developed so many habits around all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I can just visualize, you know, I think Father Keating said, wadding it all up and throwing it in the wastebasket. And, and it's okay. I feel so much better. So this will be my my lifetime work, I'm sure, but I'm happy to do it in joy and delight of getting a tiny bit freer each day.
Yeah. I wish you freedom and freedom from pain. We'll hold you. I don't know who iPhone is, and if you could be brief and share, thank you.
Karen?
It's Rusty. Oh, it's Rusty. Hi.
Hey, I need to figure out how to get this iPhone identifying itself. But I just wanted to put a shout out for the monthly practice this month on grounding. And I just had a little happenstance of seeing something back in March of last year about how walking barefoot can increase your immune system. And that seemed to be a pretty valuable thing based upon COVID. And so I started, and I just started walking the neighborhoods, and it has had an incredibly transformative sense of my body. Mm-hmm. And I think more than anything else, it's just this idea of so much of what we have is our body starts at our foundation. Mm-hmm. And just to be able to strengthen that foundation just over time, it has a whole different sense of presence physically. And if people look at the monthly idea and something, oh, that sounds like a good idea, but I don't know. I just wanted to encourage people to try it. It's wonderful. And I'm so grateful for the, you know, for the, all the sharing today about fear. Cause I certainly have been fed by that.
Well, thank you, Rusty. Yes, we are all following your barefoot walking. Thank you for living grounding for us all.
trying.
Oh, well, thank you all for sharing. So let's get ready to dive into our friends here of anxiety and regret. Let me bring up my screen. And so again, thank you, Dr. Hawkins, for your scale of consciousness. And thank you, Bev, for showing me where the laser pointer lived. It's like, woohoo, this is fun. So tonight we're talking anxiety and regret, down deep here in the levels of falsehood. And notice tonight we've moved into the column on emotions. So I want to just encourage you to study the scale, and we focused, you know, mostly on the energy levels here of falsehood versus truth, but also realize it's a right to left reading as well. So I just encourage you to spend more time with this scale. It's very, very incredible. So how do anxiety and regret separate us from the love of God? Well, frankly, the fear of separation, our fear, is fed by our anxiety and regret. Remember, when we're down in these levels of the falsehood, we're into very coarse energy. And that's why how we end our day feeling drained and lethargic. Because we can't replenish our accumulator with coarse energy. We can only replenish it with finer energy. And we're asked to remember we're here on a planet that is a school for self-developing organisms. We need to observe, what do we need to transform? What are we afraid of? Frankly, what are we running away from? Then we begin to see. We see reality. Whoops, get rid of my little laser pointer. Oh, so a couple of you had raised, and I want to just remind us all that one of the things we need to see are our programs for happiness. Now, we've separated them in general as we've talked about them because it's just helpful for our study, but they're actually interconnected. I like to think of them as a braid. Each of our centers is represented in our programs. And tonight, as we're looking at anxiety and regret, I also want you to go back and consider reviewing the other passions to see what elements of power and control, affection, esteem, safety, and security is in each of them. So as I get the screen back up, we're going to start with our friend anxiety. Again, anxiety is not bad. You're not a bad working student because you experience it. It's always a matter of self-observation and non-identification before the emotion overtakes you, so you can self-remember. Or if it does overtake you, and it will, then retrospective self-observation, non-identification, and self-remembering. Nothing in the work is wasted. Anxiety has basically three components: the emotional one, fear and dread; physiological, sweating, tightness in your stomach, rapid heart, that vagus nerve response; and cognitive, the negative thoughts, what might happen. Now, anxiety and worry are similar, but they're not the same. So worry tends to be focused more in our thoughts, but anxiety tends to be far more visceral. Worry can actually be useful. It can trigger some problem-solving activity. Anxiety rarely does. Worry is considered generally milder, and the important part of that is it can be under your control. Anxiety, on the other hand, can cause severe emotional distress. It is out of control. Worry can actually be based frequently on realistic concerns, but anxiety generally is not. I mean, often don't we all feel like we should worry, that it's an extension of our love and concern? Those of you with teenage children, I'm sure, have laid awake at night worrying about them getting home safely. Or if you have traveling loved ones until they get to their destination. You know, I even have checked for my dog to make sure she's still breathing. Father Thomas used to ask us, how's that working for you? You know, did your worry help anything? Matthew 6:27 asks us, can any one of you by worrying add a single hour to your life? So the qualities of anxiety, it's born out of fear, but it's rooted in a need for certainty, for controlling an outcome of a future event. Now, that sounds to me like it's very, very much in a power and control program, but honestly, the basis is in safety and security. When we're in a state of anxiety, we begin to give and take blame. We overanalyze either what's already happened or what might be happening. And we catastrophize. We believe the worst case scenario. It's this that can make us check for all the exits from a room. You know, my mother used to say, in case of fire, flood, or tornado, how are you going to get out of there? Now that sounds harmless, but even that keeps us in our imagination, like Tracy was talking, that we get stuck in our imagination. And that results in a constant expectation of danger. And okay, that was useful when we were being stalked by predators. But that physiologic response is still programmed in our more primitive part of our brain, which is why it triggers the fight or flight response. The important thing, Gurdjieff told us, if we begin to suffer about everything we cannot help, then we shall certainly never cease suffering. The chief thing is to find out how much imagination there is in it. And I'd just like to remind us all before you say, oh, I don't have any anxiety. We have all been living with varying levels of anxiety for the past 15, 16 months as we've gone through this global pandemic. Sorry, I will get this. There we go. Thank you. So anxiety makes us feel like we're all alone. And so let me just share a time when I lived with that. About 2 years ago, very unexpectedly, I was fired. And anxiety became my constant state. How was I going to survive? How could I pay my bills? So absolutely, my programs for safety and security were kicked in. And interesting, as I, look back on that time, I see that in about a week, they moved to the power and control because, by God, that was not right. Now, I identify as a 2 on the Enneagram, which means I retreat to 8 under stress. And my 2 may be 4'11", but my 8 is 6'4". And so while being thoroughly identified with that anxiety, my program for power and control said, sue the sons of a gun, with a bit stronger language. And I took a remarkable, patient young lawyer to remind me, in his own words, if you will, Byron Katie's statement, if you argue with reality, you will only lose 100% of the time. Now, indeed, it may have been wrong. And the work aphorism came to me that if I understood, I would not disagree. That was a shock. But the reality was, it was all well beyond my control. That gave me the slightest bit of separation. I could see my anxiety for the imagination that it was. I could hear the thoughts feeding the emotions to keep me in that state. But the reality was, I was okay. I wasn't going to lose everything and go live under a bridge. Every week we recite our prayer of gratitude that God has met and will always meet all my needs. I just needed to remind myself I believed that and to pray, Lord, I believe. Help me with my unbelief. So I'd like to take a pause now and ask you all for your observations and insights on anxiety. Share your gifts with all of us. Jeff, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi. So last week when the topic was fear, I thought, well, finally, we're this is where I live. And it's been interesting sort of sliding into this week with the anxiety because it's a more nuanced version of that. And I loved what you were saying about the difference between anxiety and worry. Worry is in fact useful in a lot of ways. My career is involved keeping track of details and not letting things slide. And so it's sort of built around that idea, but I co-op it on a regular basis into everything else. And it's a really subtle, I'm finding it to be a very subtle transition between, I just realized my video's off. You're just seeing it talking. sorry.
Thank you.
It's a subtle transition between being something useful and something debilitating. And the key, which is one of the first things that it talks about, is a marker is avoidance. So I'm at my desk working on something and I have to do something that I'm not comfortable with or concerned about how it will look to the other party and that kind of thing. And all of a sudden I'm up out of my chair. Oh, I need another glass of water. Oh, I'm going to get some more coffee. Running around the house. Oh, you know, I never did start that laundry this morning. Anything to keep from doing it. And this can go on all day. So it's become a game, but to actually see the word avoidance, it's like, I should put a sticky note on my computer that I can feel that in my body, and my body's not letting me sort of ignore things anymore. That's been, at least today, very helpful. I was in that state this morning and thought, oh, this is avoidance. Just do it and be done with it. And once I sent the email that I was hesitating to write to address the situation, it all cleared and was gone. It's like, well, wasn't that easy? There's so much more to this, but the anxiety versus worry and the fluidity between them is useful. I like Venn diagrams, and one of the ones that I've seen lately has two circles. One says things we can control and things that are important, and the overlap of them is where you need to pay your attention to. And I printed that out and have it stuck up on my whiteboard to refer to on a regular basis now. So anyway, thank you, Karen. Appreciate it. Oh, it's good to see you and hear your voice again.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. One of the things you raised, and I think it's important to bring up, we frequently talk about changing centers as a way of kind of corralling that rogue elephant. But sometimes our false personalities co-opt things that sound like a good idea, like, yeah, let's go do the laundry. You know, and that's not the same thing. You know, so perfect for nailing that one. Thank you. Pam, hello, friend.
Hello, dear. So good to see you. Yeah. You know, I'm, again, so fascinated by the interconnectedness. We go from fear into anxiety. And, you know, a lot of my fear is based because I'm constantly regretting the past and worrying about the future. And as Jeff pointed out, it's a really slippery slope from worry to anxiety. And as we've read and know, those emotions are just so fast that you may think that you're just a little bothered or a little worried about the kids or whatever, and it can just snowball to anxiety. And it also ties into the reading tonight about, you know, from the depths of hell, it's God's love is still there. Mm-hmm. Just have to be able to reach out of our anxiety and know that we're always held. And that's a tough thing to do when you're in that emotional place. So I just appreciate the opportunity to observe again that this is a recurring emotion and thought pattern. Mm-hmm. And that it doesn't serve me. Yeah. And as long as I'm right there in the moment, as someone said earlier, in gratitude, beginning and ending my day with gratitude and maybe carrying it through the day, then I can be centered. I can be grounded. Mm-hmm. And that's where we want to be. I want to just tell Rusty real quick. I have the beautiful opportunity of being in Colorado for almost 3 months. And once a week we're doing yoga in the park and we're off our mats a lot and there are no fire ants to worry about, insects, and they don't allow dogs in the park. So you can really get your feet into the grass, and it's just been beautiful to be connected to the earth and the sky at the same time in yoga. It's gorgeous. So that's it.
Yeah, what a beautiful beautiful way to self-remember. Oh, great. Thank you, Pam. Mm-hmm. Tamara, please.
So thank you for everybody's share. I've been really enjoying this. You know, during this pandemic, I got so used to not being around people that I'm having a lot of anxiety about getting out and being around people. And I noticed the times that I've done it, well, before I go out, I have these eyes telling me, no, don't go out. You don't know how to talk yet. You've forgotten how to talk to people. And you're going to stumble and you're going to say all the wrong things. And so I used some of the work principles, like what you dislike. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that when I go out and I'm around other people, I get some of these higher energies. I'm replenished because I just feel great afterwards, because I'm getting the love and then the interaction with other people. And, you know, striving for those higher strivings of willingness and courage, you know, those higher energies. So I battle with the eyes, but, I know, thankfully through the work, that I can not identify. And that's the biggest thing, is not identify.
Exactly. Yeah.
And remember, because, okay, I go out and I stumble and I don't know how to interact yet again. And it's okay. I'm not going to identify with that. And I'm going to just, be in the moment and love being around people. And, it's just something I'm working on, but it's beautiful to get out and to get that energy again. So, yeah.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Well, let's move on to our friend Regret, and then we'll take another pause. Time allows for a bit of sharing. Thank you for all your sharing. So, good old Regret. So we change the words regret and remorse so often without any differentiation, and yet they're very different. So if you look back at Dr. Hawkins' scale, regrets deepen the level of falsehood. Remorse isn't even on the scale. But I believe it's running into the levels of truth. It seems to me it's at the level of acceptance. And regret feeds anxiety because it obsesses over what we shoulda. That's one of regret's favorite songs, is the shoulda, what we shoulda done. The another song it sings is Why Me, because it's full of victimhood. Be clear, it's not an apology. It's full of negative emotions, but it's all about how the pain of the event feels to me, to you, to all of us. It's all about me. Remorse involves admitting our mistakes and taking responsibility for our actions. So regret is all about internal considering. Sorry, I don't know why that's spinning. Internal considering, it blames others, it looks back into the past, it says if only, and it's all about we want to avoid punishment of us. Remorse, on the other hand, is externally considering. It's very forward-looking because it helps us set our aim. It helps us to focus on changing our reactions. Regret wants to avoid that personal punishment, but remorse wants to avoid hurtful to others behavior. Regret has a real strong sense of guilt. And as Father Thomas told us, more than 30 seconds of guilt is neurotic. Guilt just punishes ourselves. Regret says, I don't want to feel like this again, but it doesn't focus that I don't want to do that to others. There is absolutely no golden rule in regret. It's all self-justification. And in Philippians 3:13, we're told, forget what lies behind and strain forward to what lies ahead. So while I was preparing, you know, for tonight, a friend in the work asked me, what did I regret? And honestly, that's a difficult question for a two to answer. Twos don't like to identify their own needs. But I gave it a lot of thought. And what I can say I regret is the effect an event had on my early adult life. And I'll need to give you just a little bit of story so you understand. While I was completing my internship in Houston, I was beaten and raped. Now, what I regret is the change that event brought about in my behavior. I became very fearful and very angry. There were reactions, the PTSD that planted on my neural pathways. They became wired in. I had a lot of issues in the tissues. It was years before I felt safe. I met the work and began to work on releasing those issues in my tissues, and maybe even more importantly, in my time body. Because one of the things I'd done in those early years was show my daughters how to also be angry, fearful young women. I didn't want to feel like that. And I didn't want to teach my daughters that. Now, early on, I think it was Peter brought up the idea of right use, such as Jesus's right use of anger and clearing the temple. So my right use of regret was not asking why me or dwelling on my victimhood. I was clearly a victim. But to see that I regretted the event's effect, the effect on me, the changes that were brought about in my behavior, and all the barriers that were placed in all of my relationships. And I did not want to feel like that. Now, it's been a long journey to go through this emotion and that event. And there has been healing. And I feel I've even healed my daughters. They're remarkable young women who are not angry and afraid. So I feel like I moved from regret to remorse because I changed my reactivity and I don't live in victimhood. Now, honestly, I wanted to spend a few minutes and let you share, but our time is getting away from me. So let me give homework, and if we have a few moments, then yes, I would love to hear what you have to say. So this week, there are tons and tons of commentaries on emotions, but I think this one in particular is very powerful. It's in volume 4 on page 1498 to 1500. It's short, Emotions That Shut. And then observe your states of anxiety and regret and their dualities. Pam brought this up beautifully. Are you thinking ahead? Are you in your anxiety? Or are you looking back with regret? What's the effect of all of that on your body? And ask yourself, what would I be without this thought? I think an important thing to do is practice a future memory. Set one for yourself this week for a desired outcome of some event. What does it feel like to be trusting? And I think every day we should recite our prayer of gratitude as a form of self-remembering, because God's love has always met and will always meet all of my needs. And in our June practice, we've added a few things you can do with the grounding. Engage your senses. This is a psychological exercise to help relieve anxieties. Find 5 things you can see, 4 things you can feel, 3 things you can hear, 2 things you can smell, and 1 thing you can taste. and say them out loud or write them in your journal, because this may indeed help you separate from your anxiety. And I'm going to suspect I need to turn this back over to Mary Ann. So thank you all so very much for all of that you've given all of us. And thank you, Mary Ann.
And thank you, Karen. Thank you for your vulnerability and joyful spirit. What a blessed evening. A closing exclamation point from Rodney Collin. The word difficult should not exist in our vocabulary. Immediately, it introduces imagination and limits us. Every possibility is in us. Only we say, oh no, that is impossible. To be transformed, we must stop thinking of buts. By will, we collect more will. We must not just worry about it. By worrying, we limit ourselves. We are the ones who limit ourselves. Worrying helps nothing. Exaggeration by worry brings instability. We have tremendous possibilities. We are the image of God. We are unaware of it. That's why we limit ourselves. God made us in God's image to be free, to be happy. Because God made us in God's image, we can do everything that is ours to do. So it is. And let us conclude by praying aloud in self-remembering, as self-remembering, the prayer of God's love. That God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace.